thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am the host of the Thinker Sensitive podcast. Today's podcast is the first episode of a three-part mini-series on cancel culture and public education. Much, of course, has been said about cancel culture in our society, both positively and negatively. And so I wanted to take some time to think through this issue for myself. And as I do, I would invite you to think alongside me, but also to form your own conclusions. So let's jump right in today. Monasteries, Amish and Mennonite communities, and homeschool communities are sometimes criticized for fostering environments that shelter those who inhabit and live in those communities. I myself was homeschooled all the way through high school. In order to avoid stereotypes and generalizations, I don't usually tell people that. Certainly not in the beginning of a relationship or friendship. I don't want people to think I'm weird. My experience as a homeschooler was very different than the experience of many other homeschoolers, though. I actually wasn't really sheltered much at all. For better or worse, I was basically given the freedom to listen to and watch whatever I wanted. My educational experience was extremely laid back, to say the least, and I never had a curfew in high school or a mandatory wake-up time. But every parent shelters their children to a certain extent. Of course, there are varying degrees and grades across the overarching sheltering spectrum. There's a difference between not having a TV in your home and not allowing your children to watch movies with certain types of graphic and sensitive content. It is technically correct to say that sheltering is a form of censorship. Not that it's a bad or unethical or unjustifiable form of censorship, but it is technically a form of censorship, a form of banning certain material or content in your household. I have always been opposed to a high level of sheltering in a household. My concern is that it can be an impediment to the preparation for adult life and the real world. Does it just delay the inevitable? Does it make adjustment to the outside world more difficult? Does it curb intellectual development? Does the attempt to shelter someone from all uncomfortable, offensive, disturbing, and challenging content and life situations help the child in the end or hurt the child? Does it encourage fortitude or fragility? Does it help a child deal with adversity or set them up for failure when challenges inevitably come? Does it foster tolerance or intolerance? Does it help children develop the skill of critically evaluating, scrutinizing, and thinking through difficult concepts and subjects? Does it prepare our children to thoughtfully and prudently engage with disparate viewpoints and opinions? Does it give them the opportunity to learn from the mistakes of others and the mistakes of the past? Does it limit freedom of choice and freedom of thought? These are some of the questions that arise in my mind when I think about the concept of cancel culture. But there are certainly other questions as well. Are xenophobia, prejudice, bigotry, and hate external or internal? Do these things come from outside or from within? Is bigotry the product of nurture or nature? Is racism something learned from the outside or something that develops from the inside? Did the first people groups believe that they were better than disparate people groups who came from different areas, spoke different languages, and had different skin tones and physical features because they read bigoted propaganda in a manual, or because they were just naturally bigoted? Did the first oppressive civilization enslave foreigners because they learned about it in a history book, or because it suited their personal sensibilities, whims, and orientations? If we banned, if we canceled all representations and expressions of bigotry, prejudice, and xenophobia in society, would we guarantee a future devoid of these things? Or would history just repeat itself? Are we not already seeing the history of racism and bigotry repeat itself, where the terms white, or old, or male, or wealthy are becoming inherently pejorative? Of course, cancel culture isn't simply about sheltering people from bigotry or abolishing prejudice. It's also about punishing people and holding them accountable for their words and actions, something that I do think is needed in society to a certain extent, but also something that I think we need to be careful with. Are our judgments consistent? Are they devoid of hypocrisy? Referring back to my weekly podcast on the moral spirit of the age, are they Pharisaic? Also, are we making charitable and equitable judgments? Or are we making hasty and uninformed judgments? Are our judgments just, or are they unfair? The current court case between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard is an interesting case study. There are always two sides to a story. Before we cast judgment on people, and before we decide to cancel someone or call for someone to be canceled, it's important that we have all the facts and that we have an understanding of the larger picture. But I do think that accountability is a value, and I do think that good criticism is needed in a healthy and good society. I also am an advocate for speaking truth to power. I just think we need to make sure that what we are speaking is the truth, and that our criticisms are in fact good. I also wonder about the role of political bias in all of this. How much of our calls to cancel companies, people, ideas, and content has to do with the attempt to push a political agenda or a subjective ideology in a coercive and forceful manner? But there are certainly good intentions and positive motivations here as well. Many people who advocate for or participate in what has been labeled cancel culture do so because they sincerely believe that they are doing the right thing. They're trying to be compassionate, inclusive, tolerant, and sensitive to the feelings of others, something that I think is noble, and something that I think we should encourage in our society. With that said, we need to be careful about selectiveness. Is my sensitivity selective? Is my consideration narrow? Is my value for inclusivity exclusive? Do I practice selective kindness and selective compassion, or universal kindness and comprehensive compassion? Am I only tolerant of certain demographics and certain belief systems? Or am I truly tolerant? sometimes expressions of cancel culture pin two demographics against each other. And sometimes expressions of cancel culture involve a choice or a selection between said demographics. In some of these cases, we are selectively choosing to be compassionate, inclusive, tolerant, sensitive, and considerate to one demographic over another. The recent controversy with J.K. Rowling, the acclaimed author of the Harry Potter books, serves as a great example of this. To put it very simplistically, the controversy basically pins two demographics against each other. The feminist community, or at least a certain iteration or segment of feminism, and the transgender community. Within this debate, one is essentially forced to choose between causes and between demographics. When one calls for J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter series to be canceled, one is, at least in some sense, selectively choosing to be compassionate, inclusive, tolerant, sensitive, and considerate to one demographic or one cause or one system of thought over and against another. I have some concerns about this kind of selectivity. It's important to understand that cancel culture, at least in a very broad and general sense, is not a new thing. It's been going on since the beginning of human history and the development of civilizations. Destroying idols, temples, monuments, whole cities and kingdoms, executing heretics, excommunicating defectors, burning witches, ostracizing certain types of people from communities, removing art, banning books, censoring speech, ideas and beliefs, various forms of self-expression, and even different forms of technology and media. These kinds of things can be traced from times of antiquity, through the medieval period, and all the way down to modern nation-states and contemporary governments and political systems. When I speak of cancel culture in our specific temporal and geographical context, I'm talking mostly about a form of ostracizing a person and/or abolishing a person's work, whether their content, their art, their achievements and accomplishments, or their contributions to society, through a variety of different means and a variety of different situations because of words or deeds that are considered objectionable or offensive or inappropriate or immoral. Canceling can involve mass group shaming, boycotting, widespread withdrawal of support, firing or termination, banning or blacklisting someone, loss of sponsorships and endorsements, getting dropped by a publisher, the demolition of a memorial or a monument, or removal of awards and accolades. It often results in a drastic loss of reputation, livelihood, influence, and legacy. Let's take a look at some examples. The names Washington, Lincoln, and Jefferson were recently wiped from San Francisco public schools after the school board decided to rename 44 schools that had, quote, ties to racism, end quote, and, quote, dishonorable legacies, end quote, citing histories of slavery, oppression, racism, and genocide. As I just mentioned, J.K. Rowling has faced backlash for voicing her fears that the push for transgender rights will ultimately endanger women's rights. She since defended her comments on her website and has joined 150 authors and academics denouncing, quote, cancel culture, end quote. These actions have only further infuriated her critics, who called for a boycott of her books and for her publisher to stop paying royalties. Dave Chappelle, the legendary stand-up comedian, came under fire for essentially agreeing with and backing J.K. Rowling on his most recent Netflix series. Chappelle has since been ostracized by certain people and groups amidst calls to boycott and remove the comedy special from Netflix. In March of 2021, Dr. Seuss Enterprises recalled and withdrew six books that contained racist imagery. A week earlier, Hasbro, the manufacturer of Mr. Potato Head, announced that the toy would henceforth be known by the non-gendered moniker Potato Head. These are just a few examples of cancel culture. Of course, many other examples could be cited as well. On this episode, I will evaluate cancel culture from a philosophical and ethical perspective, trying to give some practical recommendations and offer some ways forward. Any thoughtful evaluation of cancel culture is going to be highly subjective and also highly complicated in nature. For more context on this conversation, I'm going to refer you back to my episodes on censorship in the Simple Mindedness season. You might want to go back and give those episodes a listen. For time's sake, I'm going to avoid repetition here. I'm a proponent of universal, legal free thinking and free speech, with essentially the only exception being the legal exceptions to the First Amendment. As much as I value sensitivity, and I greatly value the idea of being sensitive and considerate to the feelings of others, I value freedom of expression even more. Not that I think they have to be mutually exclusive, because I certainly don't. Free thinking and free speech are natural human rights that concern all people, and they should be protected by all people. When I talk about free thinking and free speech, my focus is on the rule. All non-extremist forms of free thinking and free speech. My focus is not on the exceptions to the rule. Hate speech, legal exceptions to the First Amendment, and other forms of extremism. I think there's too much focus on exceptions to rules and not enough focus on the rules themselves in our society today. This is actually, in some ways, anti-democratic, since democracy emphasizes the power and value of the majority. The recent societal opposition against the Electoral College is an expression of this value, though that is a complicated issue that needs further nuance. In order to properly analyze this issue from a philosophical perspective, we need to make some important distinctions. First, there are two major categories that we need to distinguish between. The first one is overt, explicit, intrinsic, thematic tie to xenophobic belief and action, particularly when such belief and action is what the individual in question is primarily or predominantly known for. That is, their main or major achievements are intrinsically connected to xenophobic belief and action. The second category is an indirect, extrinsic, and unthematic tie to xenophobic belief and action, particularly when such belief and action is not what the individual in question is primarily or predominantly known for. That is, their main or major achievements are not intrinsically connected to xenophobic belief and action. I have zero problems with applications of cancel culture that take place under the first category. I do have a problem with its presence in the second category. We also need to distinguish between public endorsement or appraisal versus private endorsements and appraisals. And this distinction will come up again when we talk about public education and an ethic of education. Let's look at an example. Statues built on government land are public endorsements and appraisals, whereas books written by private authors are not. I am open to public statues being removed if the statue in question is in violation of my first category. I'm not as open to private books being canceled. To me, there's a difference between public expression that is tied to a nation, state, and city, and private individual expression. The one is governmentally and politically endorsed, and the other is not. As a citizen, one can't easily avoid the public xenophobic and hateful endorsements of one's country. But one can avoid the private xenophobic and hateful endorsements of an individual author or book. In my opinion, the individual should be protected by free speech. For the most part, anyways. In terms of things like statues, paintings, and memorials, there's a difference between the endorsement or appraisal of a particular achievement versus the endorsement or appraisal of everything the person being memorialized did throughout their entire lives. I personally think that there is room for some compartmentalization here. For example, one can celebrate the various monumental achievements of MLK without celebrating everything that MLK did in his personal life. And I think that principle or precedent should be applied universally rather than selectively. In the private sphere, there's a distinction that can be made between the content and the creator, the author and the work, a distinction between the life of the individual and the art or the content that the individual created. It's possible to distinguish between the art and the artist. For instance, some of the crooners were known to be womanizers and misogynists, but one can enjoy their music without promoting misogyny, at least I think. Charles Bukowski was known to be a pretty horrible person, but one can appreciate his work without being a horrible person. Michael Jackson may have sexually assaulted young boys, but one can love his music without promoting pedophilia. There's also a distinction to be made between what someone's personal expression is labeled and what it actually is. The difference between the statement or the communication and the interpretation of the statement or the communication. And we have to admit that these judgment calls are highly subjective. I think we also need to be able to distinguish between a belief and an opinion and a phobia or prejudice. If J.K. Rowling believes that gender is real and that it's not a cultural construction, is that a sincere and justifiable belief or a hateful phobia? An open and debatable opinion or blatant bigotry? And as I evaluate this, is my concern more about what's true or what's offensive? We need to be able to distinguish between what's offensive and what's cancel-worthy. If we canceled everything that has the potential to offend someone, we wouldn't be left with much. If anything at all. To sum all of this up, I think there are three tiers of ethical justification for cancel culture. The first is a high level of justification. This falls under my first category. It's publicly endorsed, and the bigotry or xenophobia in question is clear and plain. An example would be Confederate statues. I think there is a high level of justification for the demolition of Confederate statues. The second tier is a middling level of justification. This falls under the first category, The bigotry or xenophobia in question is clear and plain, but it involves private endorsement. An example would be Mein Kampf, the notorious personal manifesto of Adolf Hitler. I think there is a middling level of justification for canceling a written work like this, but I personally would be against it. The third and final tier is a low level of ethical justification. This tier involves private endorsement, and the bigotry or xenophobia in question is highly subjective and highly debatable. J.K. Rowling would be my example. I think there is a low level of justification for canceling J.K. Rowling, and I would not personally support such canceling. I'm going to close this podcast today, like I normally do, with some practical recommendations. I'll start with some quick hitters, and they'll be quick hitters because they're things I've talked about in the past. And then I'll follow those quick hitters with some new thoughts. The first thing that comes to mind is tolerance. Tolerance is so important. Tolerance is a value. We need more of it in our society. The second thing revolves around the golden rule. If I don't want my opinions and ideas to be canceled, then I shouldn't be so quick to try to cancel other people's opinions and ideas. Third, generally speaking, I think we should engage in discourse, offer counterarguments, correct misinformation, and provide an alternative perspective and voice instead of censoring, banning, and canceling. And fourth, I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think you can appreciate someone's achievements without appreciating their failures. Let me turn to some newer thoughts now. Thinking through, evaluating, learning from, scrutinizing, and criticizing the mistakes of the past is part of the value of history. History is valuable not simply because it allows us to learn from past triumphs, but because it allows us to learn from past failures. If we choose not to confront and learn from past mistakes, if we ignore, remove, and cancel out the scars of our past, will we not put ourselves at a higher risk of repeating our mistakes? Is it not easier for history to repeat itself when we deliberately omit or redact our history? Communist and fascist relics and monuments in Rome from the time of Mussolini have value as teaching tools. Same thing with the grounds and buildings at Auschwitz that you can still visit today. There is value in remembering the scars of history. In my opinion, sheltering people from corruption is never a good solution. This is debatable, and there is definitely a lot of variance involved. But in my experience, the sheltered child often turns out worse than the child who is exposed to the realities of the world. I would argue that cancel culture is more harmful to character development than it is helpful. It can create an oversensitivity, an intolerance, an unrealistic utopianism, a fragility and brittleness, and an entitlement and privilege that is not conducive to the building of character. Mature people are those who understand how to deal with adversity. They are those who have fortitude. They are those who are resilient. They are those who patiently endure difficulty. They have tough skin. They are tolerant of divergent opinions and ideas. They are realists. and they are okay with not always getting their way. One of the things that does bother me about cancel culture is the inconsistency and hypocrisy that is often found in it. I'm sure some of the same people that want Dave Chappelle canceled are the same people that think it's hilarious when their favorite comedian ruthlessly, relentlessly, and hatefully digs into conservative or religious people. I'm sure some of the same people who listen to Michael Jackson's iconic album Thriller and love to watch The Cosby Show are some of the same people who wanted Pepe Le Pew, the overly aggressive and possibly rapey cartoon skunk, canceled. Do we see the inconsistencies here? Do we care about the inconsistencies? This begs the question, where do you draw the line? But maybe the bigger question is who gets to draw the line? We live in an age of moral relativity, where we can't find any kind of universal agreement on what is right and what is wrong. This is one of the big moral problems of our age. What one person thinks is good, another person thinks is evil. This makes canceling things on the basis of morality highly problematic. What one person thinks should be canceled, another person thinks should be celebrated. So which moral system, moral philosophy, or moral framework gets the final say in all of this? I think there is also something to be said about the vice of envy. I think many of us might take pleasure in the demise of someone's career or the dissipation of their reputation because we're envious of what that person has. Envy can find enjoyment in destruction. There is a time for justice, accountability, and punishment. And there is also a time for forgiveness, grace, and mercy. And I believe that mercy ultimately triumphs over judgment. In any good ethical system, justice and mercy are held in tension with one another. We should always try to balance these two virtues in our lives, though we will never do it perfectly. And in time, we will never do it simultaneously. The question of how to perfectly balance justice and mercy in every concrete situation and in every present moment is a question for God alone. Almost all people have skeletons in their closets, including you and me. If we want grace and forgiveness from others, then we should extend grace and forgiveness to others. If we don't want to be judged and shamed by others, then we should be slow to judge and shame others. Do we criticize ourselves with the same vigor with which we criticize others? If we were public figures, with all our thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and speech made visible for the whole world to see, with everything we do and say held under a microscope, would we be canceled? How fast would it take? Empathy and understanding are fleeting things. Forgiveness seems to be a forgotten virtue, slowly disappearing from public discourse. Where is our self-awareness? Have we banned grace? Are we censoring mercy? Has forgiveness been canceled? I certainly hope not. Because if so, you and I are in trouble. Since after all, we need it just as much as the next person. Thanks for listening. This episode and all episodes of Thinkersensitive are available on thinkersensitive.com. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinker Sensitive.